I gotta handle this. I forced my legs to move faster to my private dressing room. Evelyn was there with another assistant, Tina Edgerton, who was busy finishing setting up my post-show food and drinks. Evelyn's eyes widened when she looked up from her phone.
Jesus, Miller, I'm calling Dr. Brighton.
No, I said, slumping into a chair. My shirt was drenched in a cold sweat. Just give me my med bag. Evelyn hurried to do as I asked. I crammed a handful of glucose gummies in my mouth while Tina poured me a glass of orange juice. They both knew the drill.
Thanks. You both can go.
Can I have my phone, Ev?
Evelyn slowly handed me my phone.
Are you sure?
You still don't look.
I'm fine, please. God, I was so tired.
I need to talk to her.
I need her. I need Violet. I can't do this anymore.
Okay,
Evelyn said reluctantly.
But I'll be right outside this door.
They both started to go, and then Tina stopped, turned.
Oh, I nearly forgot. Your dad called. I guess he hasn't been able to reach you.
I froze. The world stopped. I sank deeper in my chair, as if the floor had dropped beneath it.
What did you say?
Evelyn whirled on Tina.
What did you say?
Tina recoiled under our scrutiny, her glance darting between us.
Your dad called about 20 minutes ago. Shannon got the message and gave me his number. He wants you to call him back.
She frowned at my deteriorating expression.
Is there a problem?
Evelyn turned to stare at me, aghast. I'd told her my dad was dead, because he was, as far as I was concerned. And now he was back, haunting me. My jaw had gone numb.
You're sure it's him? He said his name was Ray Stratton.
Tina bit her lip.
I'm sorry, are you not close?
No, I said. No, we're not close.
Because he's dead. Dead to me.
Do you want his number?
I was aware I was breathing hard, my hands clutching the armrests of the chair. Emotions rampaged through my skull like an avalanche.
No, I do not want his number. He's only calling because he wants something. He saw the Rolling Stone article, maybe. He's seen my success, and now he wants a piece of it.
Evelyn recovered her poise and hustled Tina to the door.
Give me the number. I'll handle this.
The numbness was spreading, hollowing me out, making me tremble. My vision danced with black spots. Ray Stratton. The name like a baseball bat to my heart.
Miller.
Evelyn rushed toward me.
No,
I said, hardly able to make my lips move. My tongue weighed 1,000 pounds.
Tell them, if he calls again, tell them to go to hell. Tell him.
The black spots widened into a chasm, and then I fell in.
Chapter 27 Violet. Hey, V. Veronica came in the door of our place, her arms laden with groceries. I looked up from my physics text and started to uncurl from the couch. Hey, V. I replied back with a smile, thinking, not for the first time, the universe had been kind enough to bestow Veronica Myers on me to make up for all the people I missed. 2 years older than me, Veronica took me in like an older sister and helped me get the job at Max. We had nothing in common. She was soft-spoken, yet blasted old goth metal music with band names like Type O Negative and Motionless in White in our tiny apartment. She had a rotation of older boyfriends that I couldn't keep track of, while I was a recluse, studying in my room and hardly venturing out to socialize. "Need some help?" "I got it," she said, tossing her dyed black hair over her shoulder. "I think you'd better stay sitting down. Your man is on the cover of this month's Rolling Stone." I heard. "Can I see?" Veronica pulled out a magazine from one of the grocery bags and crossed over to me. "I haven't read it, but the headline is a little alarming." She handed me the magazine, and a rush of heat flooded me. Miller Stratton, the boy who'd had to pawn his guitar, was now on the cover of the biggest rock and roll magazine of all time, and he looked like he belonged there. It was a candid photo, taken at one of his sold-out concerts. He stood at the edge of the stage where a sea of adoring fans screamed for him, reaching arms clamored for him. An electric guitar hung off his slender frame that had filled out and grown more masculine and defined in the last 2 years. He wore torn jeans, boots, and a tight t-shirt that clung to his sweat-soaked body, revealing every line of his abs and the broad planes of his chest. His eyes shut, mouth open as he belted into a mic. Leather bands on his wrist highlighted the definition of his forearms, his longish hair falling in his eyes, the perfect image of a rock star. For a few beautiful, shining moments, he'd been all mine. Now he belonged to the world. Tears blurred my vision as I traced my finger along his jaw. "Hi, love." "I'm sorry, hun." Veronica gave my hand a squeeze. "Should I not have bought it?" "No, I'm glad you did. He looks sexy as hell, doesn't he?" No argument for me there. "I'm going to put away the groceries. I'll be 2 steps away if you need me." I nodded absently and scanned the cover again. Miller looked on the verge of falling into the crowd, and the headline reflected it. On the Edge, the meteoric rise and fall of Miller Stratton, the new demigod of alt-pop/rock. "He's falling?" I murmured. A journalist had followed Miller on the European leg of his world tour. The first part of the article was beautiful, detailing how Miller visited shelters in each city, despite his tight schedule, how he gave away hundreds of tickets to his shows to underprivileged fans, donated money to fund diabetes research, and how he had pledged half of his tour earnings to a charity for homeless youth. My eyes filled with tears at a photo of Miller sitting beside a homeless person in Dublin, Ireland. Miller's long legs were drawn up, hands tucked in the pocket of his jacket. The man wore a scraggly beard, and his face was streaked with grime. The two of them sat against the wall almost shoulder to shoulder, like two friends waiting for a bus. Like how Miller and I had sat against the wall of my house that first night we met. I read the text of the article, grabbing on to every word like a starving woman and savoring it. They talked for more than 20 minutes. Stratton gave the man some money from his own pocket and then directed his team to get him somewhere safe for the night, a hot meal and a shower. That incident solidified him in the eyes of fans, especially women, as proof he was worthy of the rapid attention that followed him all over the globe. Others criticized it as a publicity stunt. To that, Stratton's eyes roll.
"It was a thing that happened. The fact that the press was tailing me made it a stunt, which is bullshit. No one plans to be homeless. No one thinks they'll end up on the street. But I've been there, and so I sat with the guy and was there again. He helped me much more than I helped him."
When asked how, Stratton paused for a long moment.
"Because most days I feel like an imposter, borrowing someone else's life. You can't go back to where you came from, but you can forget. Sitting with that man, he helped me remember who I am."
God, I wanted to crawl into the magazine and be with Miller, but he'd moved on to another city, another show. Long weeks of endless touring, and the tone of the article delved into the fall aspect of the headline. My lonely ache for him began to morph into fear. The journalist wanted to know if what the tabloids had been blaring for months was true, that Miller had fallen prey to the vices of stardom, namely drugs and alcohol. Miller denied it all, but there were reports of him dozing off in the middle of interviews. Paparazzi photos accompanied the piece. Miller stumbling along the Parisian streets with Evelyn hanging close. One image showed him with a cut on his forehead from having tripped and cracked his head on a cobblestone wall in Florence. He seems pretty out of it sometimes, noted an observer who wished to remain anonymous. Offstage, it's like he's buzzed a lot, but he always seems to pull it together to put on a hell of a show. Except that Miller didn't drink. He couldn't. Adding booze would only wreak havoc with his blood sugars. The record company had sent a personal doctor on the tour for Miller. Dr. Brighton's statement was vague and optimistic, but I read between the lines. He was warning Miller and Goldline Records that it would be in Miller's best interest to quit or postpone the tour and take some time off. Because he's sick. Since I was 13 years old, I'd been researching every aspect of diabetes so that I would never again be caught unprepared if something happened to Miller. I'd vow to do my best to protect him, to tend to him through his highs and lows because his diabetes has always been hard to manage. Aggressive. I flipped through the article, scanning for telltale signs. Confusion, poor vision, the kind that led to bumping into walls. Tiredness. It was all there, and the doctors knew it. But either the record company or Miller himself wasn't listening to him. It's Miller. He won't quit. He's committed to the label, to the charity, to his fans. I grabbed my phone and called his number. It immediately went to voicemail. I shot him a text. Please call me as soon as you get this. But it remained unread. I paced the living room, my nerves lit up like a switchboard. V? Veronica asked from the kitchen. What's wrong? It's Miller, I said. I don't know for sure, but I have a bad feeling. About what? Did something happen? No, but I gave a little cry of surprise as my phone lit up with a call. Evelyn. Evelyn, talk to me. How is he? What's happening? Violet, she said, her tone calm but tinged with fear. I don't want to scare you, but how fast can you get here? Chapter 28. Violet. It happened in a blur. One minute I was in my room throwing clothes into a bag, and the next I was on a plane to Las Vegas, first class, courtesy of Goldline Records. Evelyn picked me up at McCarran in a sleek black sedan with a driver. The strip went by outside the tinted windows. We were both only 20 years old, but Evelyn was dressed in an impeccable A-line skirt and blazer, while I looked like a pile of laundry in jeans and a sweatshirt, my hair in a messy ponytail. Tell me everything, I said after tense greetings. The truth, not the PR bullshit that he was hospitalized for exhaustion. Evelyn scrolled her phone with long, manicured nails. I told you when I called that it was exhaustion because that's all the world needs to know. Now that you're here, I can tell you that, yes, Miller collapsed after the show 2 nights ago. His numbers were very low, but in the ER, they got him stable. Now he's at the hotel resting. Collapsed? My stomach felt as if it were made of stone. How bad is it? Bad enough that he needs to quit touring, and he won't, Evelyn said, finally setting her phone down to give me her full attention. His doctor says Miller is pushing himself too hard, but he's determined to finish the tour to give that charity a bunch of money. He feels guilty about all this. She gestured at the elegant sedan. And he's miserable without you. It's turned him into a bit of a bastard, to be honest. The long distance is too hard on him. You know how he is. He's all or nothing. I know. He's going to be just as dedicated to the charity. He won't want to quit. You have to make him quit. You're the only one who can convince him. He won't listen to me. I glanced at her sideways, the old twinge of bitterness from our past still hovering between us. I've seen the pictures of you two. You seem pretty close, I admitted. What you're seeing is a friendship. She smoothed her hair that was pulled in a tight, elegant ponytail. Despite my best efforts, I whipped my head to her. What does that mean? She shrugged. It means I play to win. Always. She smiled fondly to herself. My dad likes to joke that ambition is my Gatorade. I would have gotten over our little rivalry eventually, but then Miller wrote that song for you. So many songs for you. I wanted that too. What girl wouldn't? So you arranged to spend the next 2.5 years with him to be that girl? He's gorgeous, talented. When he sings... She bit off her words and shook her head. I wanted that. I wanted to be the girl in the love song. I thought if I stuck around long enough, if I were there for him, I would be. That was my goal. And I never lose. Jesus, Evelyn. But I did lose. Hard. No, that's not true. To lose would mean he'd been playing the game, and he wasn't. She turned to face me. There's no one else in his universe but you. Not me or 1,000 other screaming girls could ever change that. God knows I've seen women try and fail to get his attention, but he looks right through them. He wouldn't even entertain the possibility of sleeping with someone else, which also contributed to him being an asshole, I'm sure. I know, it's been hard for me too. We promised to try to talk every night, but he is talking to you. Every night. She scrolled her phone and then held the screen to me. This was 2 nights ago, right before he collapsed. A video played, taken from someone just off stage. Miller sat on a stool, alone in the center of the stage, a single light bathing him. He played his acoustic guitar solo and sang a song I'd never heard before. Wait for me. A thrumming song of desperation, his rich voice calling out into the dark void of the crowd over and over again. He was saturated with emotion and longing in a way that only came out in his music. Every word sank into my heart. That's for you, Evelyn said quietly. There is no one else. The video ended, and she wordlessly handed me a tissue. I dabbed my eyes. Thank you for that. You shouldn't thank me, she said. But you don't have to worry about me anymore either. I'm going to offer him my resignation. What? Why? In the middle of his tour? I have my reasons, she turned to me. But he's got to stop working himself to the bone. He needs you to convince him of that, especially now. His dad's been calling. I stared, my eyes wide. Holy shit, I breathed. Really? Are you sure it's him? She nodded. Since the Rolling Stone article came out, Ray Stratton calls almost every day. Miller won't talk to him, won't even hear of it. Oh my God. I felt pushed back in the seat, my heart aching for Miller, for how confused he must be, or how much pain he must feel. Old wounds torn open when they'd never fully healed in the first place. He never told me. Because he doesn't want to worry you about any of it. But I'm worried, Vi, and so is Dr. Brighton. The sedan turned into the Bellagio Hotel and Casino and rolled into the circular drive. He leaves for Seattle tomorrow, Evelyn said. The show's a big one. The executives from the Helping Hands charity will be there, and they're bringing a bunch of kids backstage, Miller's invitation. I'll be gone by the end of the week. She gathered her bag and phone and tossed on a pair of Gucci sunglasses to hide the tears in her eyes. Make sure it's his last show. Evelyn led me into the Bellagio Casino, past the lobby where 1,000 glass flowers covered the ceiling in a riot of color. Their beauty, the turbulent emotions coursing through me. I stared up as long as I could while Evelyn strode briskly, unimpressed. She looked like she belonged in the elegance of the hotel, while I felt unwashed and grubby. She's with me, she told the guard at a private elevator who led us on. The car went up and opened on a broad, quiet hallway. I feel like the paparazzi is going to jump out at any second, I said as we walked past door after door. We have the entire floor. Evelyn stopped at a suite where a big guy with a badge hanging from his beefy neck was standing. Hey, Sam.
What's up, G?
He gave me a nod as he opened the door for us. I nodded back, amazed at how much the label had built around Miller. Private elevators and security and entire floors of swanky hotels. Pride swelled in my chest, even as I felt more out of place and unsure that he'd want me here. The suite Evelyn led me through was huge, twice as big as my and Veronica's apartment, with elegant furniture, like a royal sitting room in Italy. A tall man in a suit, a stethoscope looped around his neck, stood at the bay window. Miller sat on the ledge. There he is. I stopped in the middle of the room, watching him, drinking him in. He looked tired, a little thinner than he did on the Rolling Stone cover. The doctor had a blood pressure cuff around Miller's upper arm, taking a reading. Miller saw me, and his expression froze. He stood up as if he were pulled by strings and stepped toward me, yanked the pump from the doctor's hand.
Vi, what are you doing here?
His gruff voice went straight to my heart. It had been months since I'd heard him say my name in person. Evelyn called me, I said, tears filling my eyes. It's so good to see you.
God, baby.
He started toward me, then stopped, also realizing we had an audience. He tore the blood pressure cuff off his arm and handed it to the doctor.
Can you guys give us a minute? I'll be back in 1 hour to finish the checkup,
the doctor said sternly. I have an urgent matter to discuss with you two, Evelyn said, giving me a parting glance, asking me to let her tell him the truth. When they'd gone, Miller took me in his arms, and I collapsed into them, my eyes falling shut with relief to feel the solidity of him and hear his heart beating against my cheek.
Vi, you have midterms. Why did you leave Baylor?
You think I wouldn't? I love you, Miller. And you collapsed after the show. Evelyn says you need to quit the tour. He stiffened and gently released me.
I see. She called you and got you all scared, so you dropped everything to be here. She shouldn't have done that.
Your health is more important than my school or your concert.
My health isn't going to change, Vi. It's always been this hard, and it's going to stay that way. Quitting the tour won't change that, but it will disappoint a shit ton of people who have paid to hear me. The people who put me up in fancy hotels like this and let me take care of my mom. And you.
You need to slow down, love, before something happens.
I can't,
he said, dropping his head so that we were forehead to forehead.
There's too much at stake.
Too much pressure on you, I corrected. I cupped his cheek, feeling the stubble under my hand, my eyes searching his. Do you still think you haven't earned this?
You read that magazine article. I knew I said too much.
It scared me, Miller. All that talk about confusion and falling asleep in interviews. My hand on his face moved up to touch a scar on his brow that wasn't there before. You never told me.
I didn't want to scare you, Vi. God knows I've done enough of that our entire lives. I figure if I can push through and finish this tour, then it'd be over. I'll have made enough money to take care of you. I could pay for your tuition anywhere you wanted. In Santa Cruz. I figured when it was done, we could go home.
Home, I murmured, and then his arms tightening around me, holding me together when I felt I'd been falling apart.
I love you, Violet. I'm so completely in love with you that being away from you is making me fucking crazy.
Tears blurred my vision as my heart pulled toward him, the magnetic polarity of us realigning. I know. I hate it too. Every day is impossible. But I'm here now. No more goodbyes. His eyes searched mine, hope and relief shining in them. Then his expression hardened, and this time with a desire that burned bright right through me, a possessive heat that flooded his eyes. He stood up, towered over me. I felt the air between us tighten, pulling. His hands took my face, his thumb brushing my lower lip. My pulse was a drum in my chest, counting the seconds until he was mine again. But he took his time, soaking me in, savoring this moment when I only wanted him. We'd been apart long enough. Miller. And then his mouth descended, capturing mine in a heated, delving kiss. My eyes fell shut as I became saturated with everything that was him. The scent of expensive clothes and cologne suffused me. But beneath it, he was still there. His skin, the taste of him, so familiar and safe, like coming home. His kisses erased the distance between us, his nipping teeth, his stubble grazing my chin, his tongue sliding and tangling with mine. A reacquaintance, A reunion of bodies and souls, hands pulling at clothes in an exchange of gasping breaths and moans. We kissed until we knew each other again, settled into each other's spaces after the long absence. We kissed until we fell back into place, where we belonged. He lifted me and carried me to the bedroom, the window shades drawn. I need a shower, I whispered against his lips. I needed more time to reacclimate us, to be with him with nothing left between us, naked together under a bright light, the distance between us washing away. He nodded in understanding and pulled me to my feet. We kissed as our clothes came off, pieces at a time. In the cavernous bathroom, he turned on the shower and drew me under rainfall. I watched the water bead over his skin and slide in rivulets over the cut lines of his body. My eyes drank him in, while my hands glided up and down the smooth, muscled perfection of his back. So beautiful, I murmured. Magnificent.
God, Vi, never again, and not letting you go ever again.
He wrapped his arms around me, pulling me into him. I planted open-mouthed kisses on his chest, over his heart, tasting the water and the salt of his skin. My exploring lips found one of his small nipples, and I sucked it between my teeth. Miller hissed a breath, and his hands that had been tentative and soft on me now roamed and grabbed, taking their fill. He reacquainted himself with my breasts, the curve of my hip, my stomach. Everywhere he touched left licks of fire, while his hardness sought entry into the soft, wet heat of me.
Vi,
he gritted out. Not yet. I kissed him long and slow, and then turned him around to take in the beauty of his back, the lines of his neck, the muscles moving under his smooth skin, tapering to his waist. I kissed him between his shoulder blades, tasted him with my tongue, then reached for the soap. I lathered the broad planes of his back, then moved around to his abdomen, skirting an insulin pump that had replaced his CGM implant. Another change in his life I hadn't been aware of. My exploration of his body grew more purposeful. I never wanted to not know him. I slipped my hand down to his rock-hard erection, gripping its girth and stroking him. Anticipation lit my nerve endings on fire, relearning what he liked, how to touch him in order to draw that sexy, masculine growl out of his chest. He had only been mine a handful of times, and now I was taking him back inch by inch. Miller gripped my waist that held him and looked at me over his shoulder.
I'm going to come if you keep doing that.
I let him go, and he turned to face me, his hair falling over his eyes that were blue, dark, and hooded. My limbs weakened at the pure want I saw there, but I turned my back before I surrendered to him completely. I wanted his hands on me, washing away the grit of time and distance, easing our separation with every touch. I lifted the long, wet mass of my hair off my neck and held it up, offering him my naked back and my breasts exposed and defenseless in front. Miller's hands found them first, kneading them, making them slippery with soap, as his mouth clamped down on the slope of my neck. I gasped, arching into his touch while pressing my backside against his erection. His hands skimmed down the curve of my spine, down to the rounded flesh of my ass, then back up my back. I felt the restraint in his every movement until his patience ran out, and my need had consumed me to the point of delirium. Quickly, we washed the soap away, and then Miller lifted me again and carried me to the bed. My skin shivered in the cool air, but his body blanketed me with its perfect heaviness and heat. He kissed me until we were both breathless, then lay his forehead to mine.
I can't stop looking at you,
he breathed. Neither can I.
Tell me there's been no one else.
Of course not. No one but you. Ever, I said, and swallowed. You?
No one,
he replied, his voice gruff, but his eyes soft and warm.
You're my first and my last.
His words and the intensity behind his eyes broke me open, erasing any lingering hesitation or doubt. Cold air swooped in as he withdrew to put on a condom from his wallet. Then he was back, beads of shower water pebbling his shoulders. He propped himself in his forearms, settling fully against me, his hands in my hair. Our eyes met in the dimness of the room's shaded windows, unblinking. I guided him to my entrance and slid his tip over my wet heat. His body coiled and tensed, using everything he had to hold back as he kissed me, softly, and then slid deep inside me with one smooth motion. Every part of me tensed at the sudden heavy fullness, then relaxed immediately under him, letting him in completely, as deep as he could get. He sank into me and held still a moment, head bowed.
Jesus, Vi, so good. You feel so good.
I nuzzled his neck, kissing his ear, his jaw, and then his mouth as he raised his head and began to move in me. A few slow, deep, penetrating thrusts soon gave way to a hard, fast rhythm, because it had been too long. Our bodies had been deprived, and now we sought to make up for it. His touch in the shower had already primed me. Our separation had my every nerve ending clamoring for this moment. The perfect heavy pressure of him hit that spot inside me again and again, driving me quickly into the edge.
Miller. Come, Vi,
he said, his neck corded with tension, his body gloriously masculine and hard over my swaying breasts as he drove into me. He reached back and lifted one of my legs over the crook of his elbow, spreading me wider. I gasped at the subtle change in angle that sent me over. I grabbed at Miller's shoulders, my nails scratching to hold on, as his body pistoned into me, pushing the orgasm higher and higher until a final cry tore out of me, and I fell back, as if falling from a great height, incoherent in the pleasure that rolled through me in waves. I let my legs fall open, reached my arms for the headboard, and let him have me. Miller rose up to prop himself in his hands and thrust with abandon, driving into me again and again, until at last his orgasm gripped him, tensing in his body and then releasing into mine. He shuddered and a grunt escaped his locked teeth, a sound so purely masculine it made me want him all over again. But we had time. Now, at last, we had time. No furtive weekends, no stolen hours. Miller collapsed on top of me, wrapped himself around me, and we lay tangled that way, sweat-soaked and satiated, our hearts slowing their thundering beats together, until finally we slept.
Chapter 29. Miller. That night was mine and hers. I told my team to leave us alone, and I ordered room service. I took my meds. We ate and laughed and talked, and I kept Violet in my bed all night. Naked and perfect, her black hair splayed out on the white pillow, her body smooth and pale in the glittering light of the strip outside the window. My hands skimmed over her curves, molding her, creating her under me. After months of having only a fantasy, erasing lonely nights spent with my hand wrapped around my cock, dragging myself towards something like relief. Now she was here, her skin warm and silken, her arms reaching for me and pulling me into the soft heat of her, again and again. Finally satiated in the late hour before dawn, we lay wrapped in each other, her head on my shoulder, my fingers twining lazily in her hair. As much as I hate to bring it up, I said, what are you going to do about your school? I said no more goodbyes, remember? If I bail on my midterms, my tuition will be in jeopardy, but I'll pay your tuition. She sighed, her bare breasts pressing against my chest with a soft rise and fall. I don't know, Miller. I've been struggling, but I was telling Shiloh that I don't think that's what's hurting me.
It's making me stronger, more focused. I can handle hard work, but I wasn't prepared how hard it is being apart from you. Neither was I. Is it asking too much for you to come with me on the tour? Yes, she said firmly. Because there shouldn't be any more tour, right? What does Dr. Brighton say? That I need to rest more. Maybe he's right. I don't want to drag you around the country, Violet, and I don't want to give you up again. But the Helping Hands executive will be at the concert in Seattle tomorrow, and she's bringing a bunch of kids. I can't let them down. Hell, I'm already letting them down. If I cancel tour dates, that's less revenue for them and for the label. There will be other tours, Miller. No one will begrudge you if you need to take care of yourself. I'm going to do this show for them. One show, and then we can plan our next step. Violet was quiet for a moment. Then she tilted her chin up to look at me. Do you enjoy any of this? Rolling Stone made it sound like you didn't. I love being on stage, being with the fans, but the rest of it is surreal. How? Everywhere I go, people tell me how great I am, even if they don't know me, even when I'm being a complete jackass. I haven't had a real conversation with anyone in 6 months. I only have to say, I'm thirsty, to send 10 different people scrambling to bring me a drink. I know it's the height of douchebaggery to complain about shit like that, but I think it would be really fucking easy to let it all go to my head. Giving to the charity makes me feel like I'm honoring my mom's struggle and not forgetting where I came from. Violet smiled and kissed my chest over my heart. I love that you said that. She cast her gaze down, her voice softening. What about your dad? My stomach tightened into a knot, erasing the lazy heaviness. I sat up and reached for a glass of water from the nightstand. What about him? I know why he's calling after 7 years, and it's not to congratulate me. He wants a cut. Violet moved to sit beside me and pulled the sheet up around her chest. Maybe, but maybe not. Instead of wondering what he wants, ask yourself instead what you want. Do you want to talk to him? Why would I want to talk to him? He ruined our lives. We had to live out of a fucking car. Mom had to do horrible things to help us survive. He doesn't deserve for me to answer the phone. She rested her cheek against me. It's not about what he deserves, Miller. It's about what you deserve. If you talk to him, maybe it would bring you some peace. Or it might just make everything worse. Violet's hand slipped into mine, and she kissed my shoulder. Only you know what feels right. I'll think about it, I said. He might not try back anyway. I told the entire team I wasn't taking his calls. Maybe I missed my chance. I gritted my teeth against the ache in my heart at that thought. I think everything happens for a reason, but we can't always see it at the time. I gave her a look. Even us. It's taken us years to get here, except now I'm not letting you go. I'm not going anywhere, she snuggled into me. If you thought I was a nag about your numbers before, I laughed and kissed the top of her head. I miss your nagging. The doctor irritates the hell out of me, but it always made me feel good that you were taking care of me. Maybe that was meant to be too, she said. I've been thinking more and more about my path as a doctor. Being a surgeon was an idea that I got stuck on, like having a crush on River Whitmore. It was just always there, but I never examined it. But now I have been, and I don't think that being a surgeon is right for me. That's been your dream since before I met you. She took my hand, traced the lines on my palm with her finger. It may sound weird, but I've been feeling more and more that the key to knowing what is right is to get out of my own way. That's how it was with you. I had to stop calling what I felt for you anything other than what it was. Real, inevitable. Maybe it's the same with my career. She looked up at me, her smile brilliant in the soft light. Maybe it was right in front of me, staring me in the face all along. My eyes widened.
What are you saying?
I don't want to sound too weird or crazy, but maybe being an endocrinologist is part of how we just fit. I frowned.
I'm the guy you'll have to take care of?
We take care of each other.
How? What do I give you in return?
You take care of my heart, she said softly, then grinned. You'll be my on-call musician who writes me love songs when I need them. Speaking of which, since this is your last concert for a while, do you think you could score me a ticket?
Hell, I can put you on the stage.
No, I want to be like everyone else, watching you in your natural habitat while the entire world screams for you.
She shook her head in mock annoyance.
I mean, who do you have to screw around here to get a ticket to a Miller Stratton show?
I laughed and hauled her on top of me. You're looking at him, baby.
Morning turned into late morning, and we hauled ourselves out of bed. Violet was in the adjacent room getting dressed for our flight to Seattle, while I lingered over our room service breakfast at the table. Dr. Brighton arrived to check my vitals and blood sugar levels.
Looks good now, he said, but it's the post-concert that concerns me, Miller. I'd hoped putting you on the insulin pump would have helped stabilize you, but that hasn't been the case. I suspect that your diabetes is of the rarer kind. Labial, we call it, or brittle, meaning it doesn't respond to treatment as effectively and brings higher risks.
Meaning I'm fucked if I tour and I'm fucked if I don't, I said, bitterness flooding me. I don't want to be reckless, Doc, but the numbers swing around whether I'm performing or not. Always have.
That is a hallmark of lability, but stress can raise your blood sugar levels. And it's clear to me that you've been under a tremendous amount of pressure with this tour.
True, but I feel fine now, better than I felt in a long time. What about tonight?
Are you asking me if you can do the show? Yes. Should you? I'd prefer you didn't until I can get a full endocrine and renal evaluation and check your A1C, preferably in a hospital setting.
I grimaced. I can't. Tonight is a big deal. We'll talk about it after. He pursed his lips.
After. Then I'll do whatever you want.
Very well. I'll check in with you before the show, after, and first thing in the morning.
Thanks, Doc.
He packed up his tools, greeting Evelyn on his way out.
Hey, Ev, I said. Have you eaten? I can order you something.
No, thank you, she said, smoothing her skirt nervously. Evelyn was never nervous.
What's up?
Tina has your schedule for today and will coordinate with you later about meeting Brenda Rosner, the Helping Hands CEO. In fact, Tina will be taking over all of my duties from now on. She squared her shoulders. I'm here to offer you my resignation.
I blinked.
What? Why?
Evelyn glanced at the closed bedroom door.
Violet's here.
Yes. Is she why you're leaving?
Not exactly, Evelyn said stiffly. I took a position with a public relations firm in Hollywood,
something I should have done a long time ago. I got to my feet and gave her a hug. Congratulations, Ev. That's great. She stiffened in my arms and I let her go. You've given me a lot, Miller.
So have you. You held my shit together when I would have gone off the rails. Hell, I wouldn't even be here if it weren't for you. I bitch a lot, but when I'm on stage and it's just the music and me and the fans, you helped give that to me.
Don't get all mushy on me now, she said, and suddenly looked less confident than I'd ever seen her. There's something I need to tell you. I haven't been honest with you.
I leaned against the desk and crossed my arms.
Okay.
This is harder than I thought. She huffed and put her hands on her hips. And, you know, I don't even have to tell you. I did get another offer, and I could just take it and be done, but I can't. I can't leave my lie hanging out there in the world.
What lie?
About why I needed you to bring me with you to LA. My arms dropped.
You told me you needed help.
Because I knew you were a good guy who would do whatever he could. She delicately cleared her throat. Especially if he thought someone was in danger.
You were in danger. The same kind as me.
Evelyn turned her gaze to her heels. Except I wasn't. I drove you to the airport and saw the bruises on your neck. When it looked like you wouldn't take me with you, I improvised.
I stared, understanding starting to creep over me like cold fingers.
You're fucking kidding. 2 days before, I'd banged my thigh on my brother's stupid air hockey table in the rec room and had a pretty good bruise. At the time, it felt like serendipity. The universe stamping my ticket out of town.
She smiled wanly.
And it worked.
I gaped, slack-jawed.
What are you saying? That you saw where Chet fucking choked me and you said...
That the same thing happened to me.
She plucked a tissue from the Fendi bag and dabbed her eyes carefully.
Yes, I did.
Evelyn, that's despicable.
I know it is. I'm not proud of myself, but I did what I had to do. Santa Cruz is too small and sleepy. I had to get out.
So you lied about your dad?
I never said it was my dad, she said fiercely. I would never. He would never.
But you put it out there for me to believe.
And now I'm taking it back. I have to take it back. I'm sorry, Miller.
She squared her shoulders.
It was wrong, and I'm sorry.
You didn't need to do that. Your vlog would have taken you wherever you wanted to be.
Maybe, but I wanted to be with you.
I sagged against the desk, ran a hand through my hair as 2 years fell between us. 2 years of her enduring my bullshit and moods and medical issues for something that would never happen.
I knew. I knew, and I didn't want to know.
I'm sorry, Ev.
Don't feel sorry for me, Miller. I always knew what I was doing. You can ask Violet what I meant by that.
She heaved a breath, then stuck out her hand, and I took it.
Thank you for everything.
Thank you, Ev. I'm going to miss you. Surprise danced over her expression, and then she regained her composure.
Of course you will.
Most days, Tina can barely remember her own name.
She pulled away quickly and went to the door. She opened it, turned, her expression unguarded and soft. "Tell Violet, the best woman won." Then she left. Our plane touched down in Seattle late that afternoon. I introduced Violet to the guys in the band. She was an instant icebreaker, warming over the cold front I'd presented to them for so long. By the end of soundcheck, we felt more cohesive as a band than we had the entire tour, and I cursed myself for being such a dick, for holding myself back from giving a shit about anyone. Holding myself back, I realized, had caused more problems for me than it had ever solved. My dad floated in on the tail of that thought, but I batted him away. "That's different. He wrecked us. He held himself back from us." Even so, I pulled my new assistant aside. "Has my father called?" Fear instantly washed over Tina's face.
"I thought you said to tell him you're never available."
"I did," I said, irritated. "I was just wondering."
"How come he doesn't have your cell number?"
I scrubbed my hands over my face, missing Evelyn already. "Never mind. If he calls again."
"Yeah?"
I hung on the precipice of two possibilities, the way it had been for 7 years, and some unknown future where I didn't hold myself back. Tina was waiting. "Nothing." The executive from Helping Hands, Brenda Rosner, arrived pre-show with half a dozen young kids, most around 8 or 9 years old. I took Violet with me. "I want you to see what it's all for." We congregated in the green room with a slew of photographers and reporters. Pictures were taken for photo ops, and Violet hung out with the kids, talking and laughing with them, and making them feel less intimidated by the surroundings. Brenda shook my hand, thanking me for my contribution. "I don't know how many shows I've got left in me," I told her. "My doctors," I said with a nod at Violet, "are saying I have to slow down." Brenda smiled.
"We're all so grateful. We don't need to ask anything more of you than what you've already given."
I believed her, but it still stung to have to quit on those kids. I signed autographs and took pictures with them. They thanked me, never knowing that I got more from them than I could ever give. One kid stood apart from the others. Brenda told me he'd had it particularly rough and held himself aloof from the others. A boy, 8 years old. He'd been shuffled around from shelter to shelter before being taken away from his parents and put in foster care. While everyone was partaking in the spread of food and drink, he leaned against the wall by himself. I moved to stand with him and leaned against the wall too, side by side. "Your name is Sam, right?" He nodded, his eyes on the commotion around us. "I've never seen that much food all in one place." I swallowed hard at the sudden lump in my throat. "Yeah, I know what you mean." He looked up at me with a depth in his brown eyes that should not have been there for an 8-year-old. "I heard you didn't have a home when you were a kid." "That's right. My mom and I lived in our car for about 6 months." "Was it hard?" "Hell yeah, it was hard. I had to wash my hair in a gas station bathroom. That sucked."
"But now you're this world-famous rock star."
"True, but a lot of lucky shit had to happen for me to get here," I said. "What do you like to do, Sam? If you could do anything in the world, what would it be?"
"I want to be a photographer. I know that sounds lame."
"Doesn't sound lame. You like taking pictures?" Yeah, I do. Annie, that's my foster mom right now. She says I'm pretty good at it.
Do you have a camera?
He shook his head. Annie lets me take pictures on her phone sometimes, but it's not the same as a real camera.
I looked over at one of the press photographers snapping photos of the kids and gave a sharp whistle between my teeth to get his attention. He looked up, and I jerked my head to call him over.
Sam here would like to be a photographer. Do you mind if he takes a few pictures with your camera?
The photographer looked dubious about handing over his very expensive professional camera to a kid.
I got it covered if anything happens, I said. I didn't often use my status, whatever the fuck that was, to get favors, but this kid was worth it. I gave the guy a, "Do you know who I am?" look that Violet would have rolled her eyes at had she seen it.
No, yeah, of course, the photographer said. Do you know how to work one of these? He asked, looping the strap around Sam's neck. This is the aperture.
I know, Sam said. This is the zoom and focus.
He put the camera to his eye with me in the frame. I leaned against the wall, arms crossed, one knee bent. Sam took my picture, then showed me the image.
I've had my photo taken thousands of times, Sam, I said. Too many. But this one is my favorite.
He beamed with pride, and my damn heart cracked. I jerked my chin.
Go. Take as many pictures as you want.
I turned to the photographer, cranking up that I'm famous smile.
You don't mind, right?
No, not at all.
Thanks, Sam said, and wandered, photographing everything in the room, including close-ups of the food on that goddamn buffet table.
The journalist trailed after him and his $1,000 camera. I called Brenda over.
Can you do me a favor? Let me know what these kids need. Anything they want. Just tell me.
She smiled.
I will, thank you. Sam needs a camera. Send me the bill, okay?
Brenda looked about to gush more thanks, but she read my expression.
Very well, Mr. Stratton.
Everything okay? Violet asked, joining me as I blinked hard, watching Sam take his pictures and smile and laugh like a little kid's supposed to.
Everything's perfect.
Chapter 30. Miller. Showtime arrived. That night, the air felt electric. The crowds were pouring into the Key Arena at the Seattle Center, and Violet listened to the thunder above and around us from the green room, her eyes shining.
They're all here to see you, she said.
An assistant poked his head in.
Yo, Miller, time to roll.
You know how crazy it gets in the front row?
I said as we headed for the door.
You sure you can handle it?
She ringed her arms around my neck.
I'm going to drown in it and love every minute of it, watching my rock star.
I rolled my eyes.
I hate that word.
But you wear it so well. She kissed me softly, then grinned.
It won't throw you off, will it? Me being out there?
I hauled her to me. She wore a tight white t-shirt and short black skirt. My gaze swept over her, taking in every detail.
Every show I've ever done, you're out there.
I brushed my thumb against her lip.
I told you, Vi, it's all for you.
I watched her delicate neck move as she swallowed.
I love you too, Miller.
She closed her eyes and kissed me, then hurried out where another assistant waited to take her down to the front row. I joined the band and we took the stage together as the lights went down. A thunderous roar from the crowd went up. We huddled in the dark around Chad's drum set,
You guys have been really fucking great. Every show, I said. I don't say that enough.
Or ever, Antonio said with a laugh. We've only been on tour with you for about 6 months.
Yeah. I got my head out of my ass. Better late than never.
It's all good, man, Robert, the other guitarist, said. Let's give them a hell of a show.
And we did. God damn, I'd never felt so alive on stage before in my life. The music flowed through me, amplified by the guys in the band. And Violet was there in the front row, swaying in a sea of faces, so goddamn beautiful. I poured my heart out onto that stage, into the microphone, laying it all out there, leaving nothing back. And when it came time to sing Wait For Me, it was just me on the stool, my acoustic guitar, and Violet. Everything I hadn't said to her in the last 2 years rushed out of me. The longing, loneliness, love. God, the endless well of love I had for that woman, as if I were born with it already inside me, in my marrow and cells. She was in every part of me that was whole and good, and what was broken in me, she had dedicated her life to healing. When the last note of the last song dissipated, the applause and cheers rolled through me. I absorbed every single bit of that energy until I felt invincible. Sweat soaked and powerful. I strode off stage after performing for 15,000 screaming fans, and for the first time, I let my ego have a moment. My blood ran hot in my veins with the dire need to have Violet. She was waiting for me in the green room, and in one glance, I felt the same need from her. A bunch of other people were hanging around, congratulating me as soon as I stepped in the door. I ignored them, striding to Violet with a single-minded purpose. Can I talk to you? I said to her in a low voice, practically a growl.
Her lips parted with a breathy little gasp.
Yes, she whispered. Yes.
I took her by the hand and led her out, though I wanted to throw her over my shoulder like a goddamn caveman. Behind the green room, the venue had an executive suite set aside for me. I locked the door behind us, lifted Violet without a word, and set her on the long counter that ran along one wall. Her skirt and t-shirt clung to her curves, hiding nothing. I moved between her legs, kissing her ferociously, mauling her, my hands in her hair, while her hands tore at the buttons on my jeans, her need as dire as mine.
It was one thing to see you open for Ed, but you? She breathed between kisses, lifting my t-shirt off. All those people there for you. Now I know why rock stars have as much sex as they want, why women throw their panties, flash their boobs. I get it now.
Her hands were everywhere on my heated skin.
That was the sexiest thing I've ever seen in my life.
I had no words but to kiss her hard, sucking at her luscious lips that were red and sweet. Something primal in me was coming awake. I needed to have her, to possess her. For years, I'd been singing to her since we were kids, cherishing her with every breath I took. When I finally had her, we'd been torn apart, leaving me wanting her from across so many miles and continents. My heart had pined and ached and loved, and now she was here for good, and my heart and soul could relax while my body took over. I wanted to fuck her hard and raw. No more poetry, no more music but for the banging of the furniture, her cries of pleasure singing out, the slapping of flesh on flesh, and my own feral grunts as I took her. My hands slid up her thighs and came back down with her silk panties already damp. I grabbed a condom from the pocket of my jeans before they could drop to my ankles, put there for this exact moment. I held her face in one hand, the other sliding under her ass, hauling her to the edge of the bar. She spread her legs wider to let me in and cried out as I thrust hard. "Yes," she hissed, her hands dropping to my hips to pull me tight to her, deeper. I bent over her, holding her hip with one hand, the other planted on the cool marble. Vi's ecstatic cries rang out, adding to the delirium of this mindless, raw possession. "Miller, I'm..." Her entire body tensed against me, cutting